Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
This is The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. And our special guest, George Lois, comes back and talks more with us this week. It's a show that you certainly won't want to miss. The Advertising Show being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. And by Captivate Network. You can visit them at captivate.com. The Advertising Show is a big radio midgets production. Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. Well, it's, what is this, 21st? Probably should have your Christmas shopping and holiday shopping done and wrapped up, but I know you don't. One good thing about today's show, it's another opportunity to expose you to George's new book. It's called George Lois on His Creation of the Big Idea. GeorgeLois.com is where you can find out more about that. And if you listen to today's show, we're going to find out, things that you might not have heard about George Lois, so it's a good thing.
Certainly his stories will be something
he needs a book
about.
Of stories. He needs
really
an audio book of stories
really
is what
does.
He needs.
You're right.
NBC in the talks for the remaining Super Bowl ads are going quickly.
Oh, yeah. Is that right?
Apparently so. Most advertising slots for the 2009 Super Bowl that weren't sold in September still haven't moved. A change from earlier this year when NBC announced the airtime had been selling like hotcakes, or faster than usual, they said. Super Bowl regulars like FedEx Corp, Garmin, Sales Genie, General Motors are
sitting out
this year's football championship to be held in Tampa on the 1st.
They're being sidelined.
Yes, they are, by their own choice.
Yeah.
But NBC says it's negotiating with other potential advertisers
always
for the 8 30-second advertising spots that remain open. Now, they may have sold some between the time this article was written and the time we're talking about it here. But
do you think they're getting a special price at this late hour?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Yeah.
So that's if you want a Super Bowl spot, go get one.
Well, you know, speaking of spots, Ray, Hulu, we all know about Hulu. If you don't, go to HULU.
That's a great place, yeah.
HULU.com. Yeah, it's a great place for online video. But anyway, when given the choice to add to an ad, people that view online with Hulu, they are 88% more likely to be opting in to view a 2-minute ad in exchange for no ads during the rest of the program. So in other words, a 2-minute ad up front that you say, not only will I view it, but you get to choose of these options. Let's say it's hardware or, you know, automotive or whatever. You click on view it for 2 minutes and you don't have to watch any of the, what would normally be 4 30-second spots during a 22-minute program. And this is all being experimented with through Hulu.com. They're finding that the opt-in ads, which appear only occasionally on the site, early indicators are that viewers want control of the kind of ads that they see during the show, and that the high opt-in rate also suggests, Ray, that because consumers are selecting the ads, they're more likely to engage with the ads.
Of course they are,
So it's good stuff, and it doesn't surprise me
that
when you get a choice of what you want to view, A, you're probably interested in that particular business category, and therefore you're going to watch more closely.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Pretty simple stuff.
Who figured that out, huh?
Hulu.
Who
knew, I should say.
Who knew Hulu could do that, right?
Right.
Gene Bliss talks about customer accountability next on The Advertising Show.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome, with your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
It's not enough to simply have customer metrics. It's what you do with them. To make them stick and use them to steer the actions, you need to take them out of the hordes of reports and paperwork and put them front and center as part of your personal mantra. I've found there is nothing like public accountability to drive customer accountability. To do this, consider establishing a customer room where a regularly scheduled spotlight is shown on these metrics and their improvement for your customers. Use the walls of the room to lay out what I call the gorilla metrics, which are the flow of your customers in and out of your business. give your leaders a drop-dead date for when they need to have these compiled. And then within your first month, take a walkthrough on the walls of this room and find out what's going on with your customer experience. For each metric requiring accountability, ask, why is this happening, who's going to fix it, and by what date? Repeat the walkthrough of your customer room on a quarterly and maybe monthly basis. People will step up when they see you're making this a priority of your business.
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to CustomerBliss.com.
Thank you very much, Gene Bliss, on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. George Lawrence back with us on the show today, and it'll be fun, I guarantee it.
Yeah.
A lot of great stories. The GM bailout plan, according to Advertising Age, could cut Pontiac, Saturn, and Saab. That's a real trendy kind of a niche car.
Right. But
the Pontiac and the Saturn, I think, is interesting. It looks like Pontiac, Saab, and Saturn could be the GM endangered brand. With them, some $300 in measured media spending as well.
$300 million.
Yeah. Hmm. So with cutting back, I guess, I don't know. Interesting that they're thinking about doing that. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I think we should all take a private jet, fly into the Senate, ask a bunch of senators if they'd be willing to, you know, fund us for next year, Ray, here on The Advertising Show.
Sure, that'd be perfect.
And, I don't know, take a limo back to the airplane, to the Teterboro. No, that's New York. Private airstrip in the D.C. area, wherever that would be.
Right.
Anyway, I don't know. You know, we saw that several weeks ago on the news, and it kind of makes you wonder if whoever was in charge of the public image of those guys going to report to the Senate and say they wanted some money.
They forgot to meet
those bigwigs from the automotive business. Yeah, forgot to meet with their publicists some advice on how to handle it.
We missed that meeting.
Yeah.
We don't know how to behave in front of a Senate subcommittee. Yeah. Legendary George Lois, one of the most creative, prolific advertising communicators of our time. This is his bio, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, running his own ad agency, he is renowned for dozens of marketing miracles that triggered innovative and popular changes in American world and American culture. In his late 20s, he was a pioneer of the landmark creative revolution of American advertising. He introduced and popularized the Xerox culture. That's in the book, too, where he actually filmed it with people. Had his competitors go back and say that's not true, so he used the Tarzan monkey and reshot it with the FTC right there. That's a man with the kahunas.
Even a
know
monkey
what I mean?
Can handle this. Yeah,
yeah, it's good stuff, and it's all in the book, and George is coming up next year on The Advertising Show. Being powered by Shipple.com with a program called Tendency. It's a really kind of a kickstart for your marketing. Check it out, S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com. Back in just a minute.
Here comes another typical commercial. I could get your attention by blowing a foghorn, or maybe an awesome scream. But even that doesn't cut through the clutter enough to really captivate your attention. If you're an advertiser and you really want your message to be heard, then reach for the golden nugget of advertising. It's what's called a captive audience. One company delivers this much sought-after captive audience. And believe it or not, it's just the people you want to reach, business professionals and decision makers. It all happens in 23 of North America's largest and most progressive markets. And the captive audience is right there in the elevators of select premier office towers. Over 8,000 high-quality video screens get people's attention with what research proves they want, news and information. It's all combined with your branded message in a way that only this captive audience sees and absorbs. Cut the waste in your advertising budget by reaching just who you want to reach. Don't just advertise. Captivate your audience. To find out more, click on Captivate.com.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Hot dogs, Armor hot dogs. What kinds of.
As promised on The Advertising Show, it's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, along with our very special guest, George Lois. The book is called George Lois.
on his creation of the big idea. You heard him last week. We've got him back this week. George, welcome back to the Advertising Show.
Thanks, guys.
You know, in the back of the book, and by the way, we mentioned a week previous, we forgot to mention how much this book cost, George. Do you know what the retail is on this book?
I think it's $50.
I'll tell you, you should be charging three times that amount. It's a great book. It's jam-packed full of some wonderful visuals here that describes the ideas and thoughts behind the creations of our guest today, George Lois. And by the way, George, in the very back of the, you've never been bashful about giving credit to those that influenced your life. Your wife, Rosemary, just called me and said, "What the hell am I doing in position number 12? Of the motivators, mentors, and muse, she felt she should at least be somewhere in the top three. So, you're a wonderful lady, Rosemary Lois, and you know, if her hearing or eyesight ever comes back, George, you're totally screwed. I want you to know.
Yeah, no kidding.
Let me ask you real quick. So before we get into these wonderful stories that you have, let's talk a little bit about your thoughts when it comes to combining visuals with words. It's not enough today just to have an impactful visual, and it's not enough just to have interesting or compelling words. You say that it takes a combination of both to really make a hit ad. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, the when good you got to understand, there was a lot of good copy in advertising in the days where advertising sucked. you know, before the Doyle Danes of the world, and you know, and then when I started Papa Kane Lois, there were a lot of good copy lines, there were always good copywriters, but there wasn't the art directors weren't talented people, or certainly they weren't allowed to even exercise any talent. You know, the writer you know, would get the stuff from the marketing people and the account person, and he would figure out a copy line, and the writer would go into the, you know, art director or the room and put a piece of paper on his desk and say, "That's it. You know, that's the headline. Do a layout." And that's what they basically did. They did layout. So there was no conceptual work being done with a combination of the art director and the writer, with a word guy and a visual guy. And that's what advertising was. That's what it was all about. That's the way it was getting done. Advertising basically changed. The first great, seed of it changed. Seed that changed advertising was when Bill Burbach was lucky enough to work with a designer by the name of Paul Rand in the late 40s and 50s, early 50s, and they did some all-back ads together. And Paul Rand was a great mentor of mine, a guy who got me excited about advertising and designing, because I could see he was doing some witty, sharp, wonderful stuff and doing it his way, you know, and getting away with it and making a living, a terrific living. And so when Burbach worked with Rand, he realized that when you work with a terrific graphics guy, the work could be better. You know, I said, duh, no kidding. No. But, that was his epiphany, and that's what changed advertising. That's when Burbach started an ad agency in the 50s and tried to get Rand to come with him, but Rand was kind of a wonderful, irascible guy that said, "Go to hell." But there's a guy down there by the name of Bob Gage, was a young guy. He's a terrific designer, and Bill brought Bob Gage with him. And Bob Gage, as the art director to Doyle Dane Burbach, was the guy that really made Doyle Dane Burbach, because all of a sudden was this terrific art director who understood words, wrote some of the headlines himself, and did advertise with graphic punch, et cetera, where the words and the visuals work together to make it one and one is three. So that was the beginning of the power of the art director. When I worked, and then I went to work at Doyle Dane, and I went in kind of as an enfant terrible kind of provocateur, art director there, and I got a terrific reputation. And I left after a short time, and I started Papa K & Lois, and basically that was the second creative agency in the world. Doyle Dern Bernbach was the first.
Did Bob Gage hire you, George? Or did
actually, he tried to hire me when I was 24, and he wanted to give me the job as the head of the promotion department, and I said, oh, no, I'd love to do promotion. I'll do the ad campaign, then I'll do the promotion. He said, no, you don't understand. You got to just do promotion. I said, no, I want to do advertising, promotion, and anything else, but I have to do it from the beginning. And he said, no, that's not the job. I said, well, I'll come back when I can do the advertising. He said, George, you're 24 years old. I just offered you one of the greatest jobs in the world. I said, I'll come back when I could do the advertising. Mm. So I went back when I was 28, and Bernbach loved my work because I did the kind of work that Doyle Dane was doing, plus there was kind of an edge to it that he hadn't seen in advertising before. So when I started my ad agency in January 1960, I was the second creative agency, and we were almost immediately successful. I mean, we were the hottest agency in America in 1960. What happened is, I proved that there could be more than one great creative agency, and coming out of my agency were three or four other agencies. Dick Rich left PK, my agency, and started Wellsvich Green with Mary Wills. Scally McCabe Sloves started Sloves, and Sam Scally came out of my agency. Carl Alley came out of my agency. Carl Alley. So before you knew it, in the mid-50s, there were like four or five creative agencies. And so when I started my agency in 1960, that was the beginning of the creative evolution. It wasn't a revolution yet until there was more than one agency, and right. Then all of a sudden it became a full-blown revolution when there was three, four, five, six, seven. And that changed, and it all came about with coming from what you're talking about, this marriage of words and the visual. I shock people, young people, anybody, when I talk and give lectures, and sometimes they say, well, how do you go about doing advertising? You learn all you can about the subject. You do your homework and you find out, you check, you make sure the marketing is and the positioning is correct. I can talk hours about each of the things I just said, but you got to do all those things, and then what you have to do is you have to have a theme, and I say, let me draw you a picture. First came the word. They say, what do you mean? I said, well, what you have to do is you have to create a word. You have to create a slogan. And they look at you and say, well, you're this great graphic. You do the Esquire covers. You did this, with almost no words, et cetera, and you work first with words. I said, always. Always.
They think you're such a graphic guy that you would.
Absolutely. In fact, that's why, I insult a lot of really good, terrific writers I've worked with, but I don't like working with writers because if the better the writer is, the more trouble I'm in, because if I work with a really talented writer and he comes up with a terrific line, but I know instinctively or almost immediately that I can't do anything with the line. Mm. I really can't. It's just a great line, but it needs more than that. And so I have to kind of play games and talk the guy out of it so I don't act like I'm completely arrogant. Yeah. When I work with myself and I come up with a line and I have a line, I say, oh, I like that line, but I can't do anything with it. And then I'll keep working on something. And then when I get something, and I say, oh, wow, when I put that together with this, there was a guy who was the head of Bristol Myers many years ago, said to me, I judge advertising all the time. I said, yeah. But I don't think I know what I'm doing. I said, I think you're right.
Yeah.
He said, well, can you tell me what to look for when I look, what should I be checking? What should I be looking for when I judge advertising? That was a hell of a question, and I said, I just brought it out. Well, there's two things. You need a mnemonic. It's not mnemonic. M-N-E. It's from the word mnosis, which is a Greek word for memory. You need a mnemonic of words. I want my MTV. Mm-hmm. And you need a mnemonic of a visual, and that's a rock star picking up the phone and saying, "I want my MTV." Mm-hmm. So you need the marriage of the visual and the words. And he said, "I don't think I've ever, Twister Myers has ever done advertising that had that." I said, "No."
And by the way, our guest today did create the MTV graphic logo that still plays out today, as well as the slogan.
And the television. Yeah, exactly. On the advertising show, it's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, our very special guest on this holiday edition, George Lois. The new book is called George Lois on His Creation of the Big Idea, and we will continue in just a moment.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Burgess is a darn good battery.
In my hand, I have a Burgess battery, the darn good battery. And
this is The Advertising Show. Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, and the author of a brand new book. It's called George Lois on His Creation of the Big Idea. Here's George. George, welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you guys.
Yeah, and check out George Lois. That's LOIS.com, GeorgeLois.com, and it's a great place to find out more about today's author and, more importantly, today's book and how to buy it. You've been doing some teaching, George, at art and design schools, I know. What are you finding among art students these days when it comes to creativity? What are they talking about?
I don't know. It drives me crazy. I get emails every day, maybe an average of 20 a day, from young people all over the world, and they go on and on explaining, how I influenced them, and how I this and that. They go on and on, and I look at their work and I don't see it, you know. It drives me crazy. For instance, people talk to me all the time about the Esquire covers I did. Oh my God, you did this! You changed the world of editorial. I said, "Where? Where did I change it? I mean, what I did sits there and hasn't influenced anything. You know, it really hasn't. I mean." And you get all these accolades, and you get into the Museum of Modern Art, and everybody telling you you're boy genius. And I'm looking at everybody's work, and I just don't understand, you know. And part of it, I think my being grouchy about it and being disappointed in much of the work. Is what led me to do, George Lois on His Creation of a Big Idea, is trying to say to everybody, you know, I mean, I've given these classes, and I say, sometimes I say, and I say, 25 people, how many of you have been to the Metropolitan Museum of Art this year? Nobody raises their hand. Has anybody been to MoMA this year? You know, one person. You know, I mean, it drives me crazy. I mean, I look at them and I say, I just want to throw, I throw my hands up and say, what's wrong with you kids? Well, what the hell do you do? I mean, when we talk about movies, they only go see the shit movies.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? The biggies, boom, bang, you know. And when I talk to them about the movies of the great movies of the 40s and the 50s, et cetera, you know, they don't know what I'm talking about. I mean, it basically is, there's no passionate interest and curiosity about art and the world we live in, about all those things I've talked about. There's no passion and interest in art and in architecture, in the Bauhaus movement, in current events, in literature, you know, in et cetera, et cetera. And it drives me nuts, you know. But they all say, "Wow, what you do is great." But you know, I don't see where I was a great influence on advertising in the sense that when I started Tabacane and Lois in 1960, after I left All Day and Burnback, and that was and it was the second creative agency in the world. What happened is, it put the art director in a power pitch situation because my name was on it was Tabacane and Lois, and who's this guy Lois? And people talked about Lois, and he was an art director and a designer, and all of a sudden that job, in fact, salaries in the good agencies in New York City tripled for art directors a year after I started Tabacane and Lois. Because all of a sudden people realized that these guys, you know, had to have the power, you have to have power in an ad agency to get away with the work you do, you know, because otherwise they trample you, you know. So the being an art director became important and became kind of a sexy job, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, rather than being layout men, you know, in the old days when people gave you, when a copywriter would just give you a piece of copy. But I don't see, you know, I don't see any dramatic, exciting image making, going on, you know, kids are living in this world, in this age of the internet, where everything's at your fingertips. Every fact known to mankind is at your fingertips, and you talk to them and they don't know anything. You know, if you bring up something that happened if you bring up a Carol Lombard or Clark Gable or Julius Caesar or somebody, they all say, "Well, I wasn't alive then."
You know, you were saying before, George, you unfortunately can't get through to all of them, but hopefully you can get to a few of them at least.
Oh, yeah. When I was a kid, you know, you talked about mentors before, you know, and I have a dozen mentors, you know, and people who, anybody who says who's successful in anything you do in life who doesn't acknowledge their mentors and doesn't think they have mentors is full of crap, you know.
Right. Yeah, right.
I've had mentors from the woman, this incredible art teacher I had when I was a kid in public school who sent me to the High School of Music and Art. You know, I didn't know there was a High School of Music and Art.
Yeah.
And of course Paul Rand, that designer, was a mentor because he had I saw the work he was doing in the newspaper, etc. But then I went to Pratt Institute and my first year. Luckily, and the only reason I stayed my first year is because I met my wife, and there was no way I was going to leave her alone. No way I wasn't going to be with that woman all my life. So I go into my second year, and I said, it wasn't nearly as good the High School of Music and Art was. But I go into my second year, I went into a teacher, a guy named Mahershala Levitt, and he changed my life because what happened is, you know, he's talking about art. He was talking about everything that I was interested in, and not so much design, but I was thrilled by being around his ambiance, you know. And after a couple of months, he said, "What are you doing in school?" And he gave me a piece of paper. He gave me an address. And he said, "Go there. Go to see this woman, Reba Socius. She will give you a job in a second." and he literally threw me out of school, and he started my career, you know. I mean, there's a string of people that were mentors to you that changed your life. People say, well, you would have made it anyway. I'm bullshit. Who knows what you would have done, you know what I mean? There are people along the way. And along with the influences that I talk about, along with this 5,000, 6,000 years of the history of art, the history of culture, of high and low culture, that you have to understand, you should be completely thrilled about learning and understanding that is going to feed your work. Along with that are these, this handful of people, maybe, but who have, who made you what you are today, you know, and that corny line about standing on their shoulders is what it's all about, you know. I mean, that's, I may stand alone sometimes if people talk about, you know, me as an art director, but I'm standing on a lot of people's shoulders.
You know, George, is identified in your book, your number one influence in your life was your father, Harlampos Lois. And, you know, we've had over 400 guests here on the Advertising Show, launched in 2001, and Ray and I both, each time we have you on the show, before we have you on the show, we say, of all the people we've had the honor of having here on the Advertising Show, you're not right at the top. You are the top as far as we're concerned, George, and we want to appreciate your time and tell you how much we appreciate you coming to the show now, your third trip.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, it's always a joy to talk to you guys. First of all, you know what the hell you're talking about. And second of all, you're great fun. And third of all, you know, the best thing is you're not full of shit.
We try not to be. Hey, you can go to Target and buy the entire season of Mad Men, or you can get the real thing by buying the book, George Lois on his creation of the Big Idea, because that's the true story. And being here December 21st, you still got time to ship it to a whole bunch of people, don't you? So go to georgelois.com. That's LOIS.com. George, happy holidays. Thanks for all your great stories, and just thanks for being here for us.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks, Barry. Geez, you guys are so wonderful, really.
Love you, George.
I love you.
And we'll be back right in just a moment here at the Advertising Show. Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Smart marketers are discovering a new and better way to get creative solutions. One company got solutions for a corporate identity program in less than 36 hours. The second got solutions for a public relations campaign that won 2 international creative awards. The third got solutions for a direct marketing campaign that got a 30% response rate. These marketers are finding creative solutions in a better way, the open ad way. You go to openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 creators. Within days, you get 20 or more creative solutions, and you pay only for the solutions you use. It's a radical new idea. You owe it to yourself to discover what it can mean to have creative solutions on demand. Find out now by going to openad.net, openad.net. Creative solutions on demand.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
I love Bosco. It's rich in chocolate tea. Chocolate-flavored Bosco is mighty good.
George, thanks
for
again for being a part of The Advertising Show. Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth here back as we wrap up the year. A lot of good guests this year. If you go back and look at the guest list, a lot of cool people that we've had a chance to meet, and we hope you get a chance to meet them too, by visiting theadvertisingshow.com. Next week, it is almost the end of the year, December the 28th. Michael Port is our special guest, and Michael has written a book called The Contrarian Effect.
Oh, contraire.
Yes, he is, and he did. And Michael will be our guest, and I guess he's not doing anything New Year's Eve or prior to that, because he's going to be right here.
Say,
right?
Bring the booze, so that's why I'm sticking around.
And the cheese dip, yeah cheese
that's
ball.
That's true. Exactly. Yeah. Who would have thought that Michael would have brought the nacho dip you can just buy right off the shelf.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah.
Don't bring anything, okay?
Any kind of item that could go bad in a refrigerator that they've got in a jar that's at room temperature, you know they've got some kind of stabilizer in there.
You think so? Thanks again to all of our sponsors this year and all of the people who helped make the advertising show what it is. I'm talking about Shamin Abbas and Gene Bliss. As a matter of fact, Shamin is with us right now. Let's listen.
And now, it's time for Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional. Now, here's your host, the uncompromising Shamin Abbas.
A PR firm must understand a client's business culture. Every business has its own internal culture, mission, and personality. A PR firm, like an ad agency, needs to become inculcated in the culture of a client's business so that it can act as a representative of that business and speak about it as if it's from within the culture and with great passion. It's a mistake to think you can pick up all you need to know about a client's business from an occasional meeting, their website, marketing materials, and ads. You need to get to know your client one-on-one. You need to absorb that idealism and then drive those very ideas that drove the company to form in the first place. When a publicist knows enough of the facts about any given business and its culture, you can combine that knowledge with a publicist's natural enthusiasm. You're giving your client the best possible shot at editorial coverage. In some ways, the goal is never to say, "I'm not sure, let me ask my client and call you back." Interview your clients the way those journalists will. Get to know the firm's stories about how it got started, about how it may have struggled at first, about how the employees feel about their employer, and about how its principals view what they do and how they do it. Your passion for their business is infectious to a reporter, as long as it's sincere. If it's not, you already know that a decent reporter can smell insincerity over the phone, and that does not serve your client. Make it a practice to immerse yourself in a new client's cultural personality. Watch how principals interact with one another and subordinates. Elicit stories. Watch for emotional cues. And don't work with clients whose business model or mission you feel ambivalent about. Sometimes that's a luxury in this business economy, but you are not serving yourselves or your clients when you do not feel as charged up as they do about what they do.
You've been listening to Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional with host Shamin Abbas. Shamin is president and founder of Shamin Abbas Public Relations, a full-service agency providing local, regional, national, and international media relations, special event production, and inventive promotion, with offices in New York City and West Palm Beach. To learn more, visit ShaminAbbasPR.com. That's ShaminAbbasPR.com.
Shamin Abbas on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Hope you're having a great holiday season. We have, well, one thing here that I'd caught my eye from Advertising Age. Consumers are bugged by many ads, usually the ones that suck the most.
Yeah.
The addition of Citigroup to the list of powerful institutions begging for government rescue only reinforced the impression that everything has changed, but it might not have changed as much as you think. There's a Roper online survey, 2,000 American adults. The survey conducted through October the 10th of this year, it says a lot of people think the ads are annoying. Mood stabilizing. Consumers may have calmed down fairly quickly after the financial meltdown. They get white hot, according to the survey, when they're seeing these ads appear on television and on radio. And let's see. Just over three quarters of online Americans anticipate having to cut expenses in the next 6 months, according to research.
Just three quarters.
Just three quarters, yeah. The other ones are going to spend like crazy. first on the chopping block, eating out at restaurants, which 82% of people have cited that. Entertainment outside the home, clothing for themselves, vacation and pleasure travel, buying lunch, hobbies and major home improvement projects. 15% they were eyeing their computer or internet costs as well, which, come on now, take a deep breath.
I think that would go way down the line, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Even if you didn't vote for Obama, we'll still be here.
Well, you know,
pending a nuclear war.
This redistribution of wealth, Ray and I don't have to worry about that because we have no wealth to be redistributed.
No. Right. I had some change, but I gave it away.
Right. We're redistributing on our own.
Look forward to Michael Port next week, the author of The Contrarian Effect, And our thanks again, once again, to George Lewis for spending a couple of weekends with us here at theadvertisingshow.com. Being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit them online at adage.com. And by Captivate Network. You can visit them at captivate.com. Well, next week, same time, same place?
Sure.
What a plan. The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth is a Big Radio Midgets production.